Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
It's all out war. David Cameron, the British Foreign Secretary, says we are in. And that means the United States must be too. Netanyahu tells David Cameron that they are going to attack the territory of Iran. Iran has promised condign punishment within seconds if the slightest assault on Iranian territory should take place. So batten down the hatches, fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be the mother of all talk shows. Let's hope we get through to the end. Stay tuned for 2 hours of top analysis from top guests and the best calls and a monologue worth listening to. It's the mother of all talk shows.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
I'm slightly handicapped this evening. Well, I don't have my wife for a start, and you know how much I rely upon her. Hence, I come amongst you unmade up, so I hope I'm not startling you too much. Secondly, there is the distinct possibility I'll have to run off and vote in the House of Commons on the finance bill, otherwise known as the budget. I'll try and miss it and keep on talking to you, but you may hear a division bell ringing, so don't be startled by that either. As you'll have guessed, I'm in the Houses of Parliament right now. I was just saying to the Prime Minister, well, twice, actually. I spoke to him on Monday, and I spoke to him again this afternoon at Prime Minister's question. Neither exchange was particularly satisfactory. I asked him why he had not found any word, not a single word, to condemn the Israeli attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus, which was, after all, the proximate reason for the extraordinary events of last weekend, where hundreds of drones, which were never intended to reach their target, were known to be certain to be shot down by the Iron Dome, by British and American and even Jordanian ordnance before they reached their target, but 8 ballistic missiles which were guaranteed to reach their target and did. Lucky for Israel, that target was a military base, but it could easily have been the billionaire's villa in Tel Aviv, underground which Netanyahu was skulking like a rat, leaving his people to face the music that he had invited into their homes. When I asked Rishi Sunak why he had not found one word to condemn a brazen breach of international law, of the Vienna Conventions which make inviolable diplomatic property in all countries, for every country, all he could say was, whatever happened in Damascus, the Iranian response was completely over-egged, that it was disproportionate. Well, what did happen in Damascus? The State of Israel, using American-supplied weapons and aircraft, launched missiles at the consulate of the Iranian embassy, sovereign property of Iran, just the same as if you dropped a bomb on Iran itself. It killed 10 people, at least 10 people, some of them Iranian generals, others Iranian diplomats, others Syrian workers, local workers in the embassy. It was an act of mass murder. If you came upon someone who'd gone into a building and murdered 10 people, you'd call that mass murder. And when you add the diplomatic impact of making such an attack on another country's embassy, well, you have a crisis, one that they are not prepared to talk about, for the most part, in Western media or in Western politics. It was obviously going to ensure an Iranian response. It was intended to bring forth an Iranian response because Netanyahu wants a war with Iran, because he hoped that Britain and the United States would join that war alongside him, thus extending his tenure as Prime Minister of Israel. The only way to extend it, the only way for Netanyahu to stay out of prison. Now, Joe Biden and Rishi Sunak, he told me in Parliament, was cautioning restraint, asking Israel not to retaliate to Iran's retaliation. But then David Cameron flew to Tel Aviv and met with Netanyahu today and has declared that Israel is going to launch a retaliation inside Iran and that Britain will support it. Thus, I've got to put it this way, we have the beginnings of all-out war. We have Israel, the United Kingdom, and the United States openly saying that they're going to be involved in an attack on the Islamic Republic of Iran. Russia and China and Iran will be up against them. Russia and China have made it absolutely clear that they support the Iranian action last weekend over Israel, and they will defend Iran if Israel attacks it with Western support. I don't know what you call that. I call that World War III. I call Iran, Russia, and China on one side, Israel, the UK, and the US on the other side. I call that World War III because everybody knows that the Iranian attack on Israel will be 10 times greater than the one they launched last weekend. And it will not be telegraphed 5, 10, 15 days in advance. It won't be telegraphed 15 minutes in advance. And it will involve far more deadly missiles than were fired last weekend. It will involve weapons that Iran has never used before, and that nobody in the West knows the true nature and character of, because unlike most countries, Iran makes all of its own armaments. And judging by the demand for them, they're pretty effective at that. And yet, it is utterly remarkable that Western politicians are not only speaking of other things, but are speaking of anything but this impending World War III. I'm not sure if they've even given up the manufacturing of consent. They're just giving their green light to Netanyahu to launch what will become World War III. They're not even seeking to persuade people of the correctness of their action. An unelected prime minister has gotten an unelected foreign secretary who was ennobled by the unelected head of the British state, who went to Tel Aviv to give his green light to the forthcoming war. If nobody else sees the gigantic chasm of a democratic deficit that represents, well, I'm not sure that they are fit to be running our affairs. So when I asked Sunak this afternoon, I spoke twice this afternoon in Parliament, both times about Gaza, something of a parliamentary record, I'm told. When I asked him this morning, you said you were asking Netanyahu for restraint. What are you going to do if he rejects your advice and launches an unrestrained attack on Iran? Answer came there, none, not even an attempt at an answer. They're just going to do it. That means they're putting your children, your house, your life on the line without even a by your leave, without even a vote in this puppet parliament. the outcome of which will be guaranteed, but they will not even allow that. At Prime Minister's Questions today, not one person raised this crisis except me. Not one out of 650. There they were with their student union japes, laughing across the aisle at each other, talking about anything, everything, but the fact that by the weekend, we could be in an all-out war. They were talking about Liz Truss's memoir, which will be remaindered in all good bookshops for 99 pence by the end of the month. Nobody in their right mind wants to read the memoir of someone who was Prime Minister for 40 days, the shortest tenure of any Prime Minister in modern British history. And I've got to tell you something. I don't like to be mean, especially about women. But as I saw her speak in the House of Commons yesterday, I again marveled that such a diminutive, unprepossessing figure could possibly have ever become the Prime Minister of Britain. And I'm counting Rishi Sunak and other miserable British Prime Ministers in that ranking. There can never have been a more utterly inadequate figure ever to occupy 10 Downing Street. And there have been some stumers in that job. But that's all they talked about this afternoon. Angela Rayner, the Labour deputy leader's tax affairs, her council house sale, Liz Truss's ruminations on her parliamentary colleagues. Not one person asked, other than me, are we going to be at war by the weekend? How's that going to go? It is truly extraordinary, the diminished, degraded nature of the British political class, and I'm certain that the American political class is no better. In fact, the only thing we don't have here, and I'm following APAC tracker, and you should too, it is staggering. People you have never heard of, even if you're an American, people you have never heard of, receiving 500,000, 1 million, 1.5 million, Joe Biden's case, $11.1 million from the Israel lobby. Talk about bought and sold. America's interests have been completely purchased by the supporters of Israel. No wonder they're going so gung-ho into the forthcoming war. They've been paid already to do so. And Israel has the receipts. They can do no other but to stand for and with Israel, even if it harms irreparably the national interests of the United States of America. Now, other European countries are not quite so stupid as ours. Whereas you might think that Britain, as the author of the entire Palestinian tragedy, disaster, Nakba, catastrophe, would feel some historical obligation to actually try and steer some kind of balanced course in the events unfolding in the Middle East, the opposite is true. Britain, the colonial power that founded the State of Israel, is backing its own creation, a country with 3 million people of fighting age, against another of its colonial possessions, namely the now Islamic Republic of Iran. When I raised this in the House of Commons this week, there were all kinds of bemused looks, partly because most of them looked to be about 19 years old. On the Labour benches in particular. When I said, do you think the Iranians are listening to you? You who occupied their country, who looted their wealth, and who overthrew their one ever democratic socialist prime minister elected by the people in a democratic election. Britain overthrew them. In my lifetime, well, it was in 1953. I was inside my mother's tummy when it happened, but I was still alive. When this happened, it's not ancient history, but nobody knew it. And nobody understood that with a history like that, in modern times, why would Iran listen to little Rishi Sunak, the shoeshine boy of the American Empire, on these matters? But the die is cast. David Cameron, close friend of a pig, was the man chosen to announce Britain's participation in what may become a Third World War. It is truly amazing that we have reached this stage, not even sleepwalking, but in some kind of political coma. First over Ukraine, and now in defense of Israel with its 3 million people of fighting age against a country, Iran, with 41 million people of fighting age, with a fleet of ballistic hypersonic missiles of a standard of the big superpowers, that we ended up where we are. Who do you think is going to be doing Israel's fighting for it? Israel could not have repelled even the deliberately disabled Iranian effort over their skies, over their territory last weekend. It needed British jets. It needed American firepower. It needed the American-supplied Iron Dome. And it needed the little king of Jordan to defend them. Imagine the Jordanian people, a great people, Bedouin Arab people, with millions of Palestinians living on their land, with a million or two Iraqis living on their land, served Israel last weekend. I don't know about you, I wouldn't put much money on the chances of the little king lasting much longer in Jordan, or the little prime minister lasting much longer in Britain, or the little president in Paris managing to see out his term, never mind be re-elected for another, or little Joe Biden, diminutive, diminished, degraded, demented, leading the American people into what might be an historic tragedy which can reach even over the Atlantic. We'll have excellent guests. Professor Marandi from the University of Tehran in the second hour, and the inimitable New Yorker Gerald Kalenti talking from the United States about how all this is playing out. We've got a poll running. Has Israel lost the war? Overwhelmingly, people say yes. But it turns out, actually, that the war has only just begun. Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be the mother of all talk shows.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Gerald Calente is one of my very favorite guests. He wears a hat sometimes. I don't know if he does this evening, but he's funny and perspicacious at exactly the same time. He's the publisher of Trends Journal and founder of the Trends Research Institute. If you're not following Trends Journal, then you're a fool, because Gerald predicts, he doesn't track, he predicts what's coming next with unerring accuracy. Gerald, welcome back to the Mother of All Talk Shows. Very good to see you again, not wearing your hat, but of fond memory. Gerald, what do you think of my thesis that actually the world will be at war by the weekend? How are you feeling about that?
Well, the world's at war already. World War III began, it was a cover of our Trends Journal magazine on February 22nd, 2022. From COVID war to Ukraine war to world war. And it's only escalating now with the Israel war. And I was listening to you before we went on the air, and you nailed it perfectly. And I, by the way, I also want to congratulate you for all that you do as a real man, standing up and fighting and being in the British Parliament now and speaking the truth.
Thank you.
And as you were saying, when you said what was going on in Israel and giving them the history of it, you said it was like talking to little kids. And that's where we're at now. And you talked about Iran. This is one of my books called Trend Tracking, far better than Megatrends Time Magazine. 1989, I wrote this book. I write how I became a trend forecaster. And I became a political atheist when, and it's right here, the fall of the Shah. I was the chief government affairs specialist for the chemical industry, number two guy running a major trade association. Back then, you know, all I wanted to do was make money and have a good time. I was killing environmental legislation at the height of the environmental movement. And I'm living between D.C. and Chicago. And the Iranian conflict starts heating up. And Jimmy Carter, the little peanut farmer with a pair of cojones about the size of a peanut, he goes over there to visit the Shah on New Year's Eve with the Shah and his wife. I write about this in detail. He came back and he said that the Shah is the island of stability in the Middle East. In the Bronx, we used to say bullshit has its own sound. I'm seeing millions of people taking to the streets. The average person, like the little dopes you speak to in Parliament, these little boys and gutless girls, they had no idea of the United States, and as you were talking about, the UK overthrow of the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953, because that lousy Iranian president had the nerve to say, no, this oil doesn't belong to Anglo-Iranian oil or Standard Oil, or better known today as BP and, it's ExxonMobil back then, Standard Oil today. It belongs to the Iranian people. No, it doesn't. And all the data came out. It only took until 2017 for the crap that spewed out of that little Churchill's mouth, the MI6, him, and the CIA, that was also headed by Kermit Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt's grandson, to overthrow Mossadegh. So when the people are taking to the streets, I said, no, this thing is for real. And that's how I became a trend forecaster. I became a political atheist and I stopped believing the BS in the mainstream media and I started investing in gold and oil. That's when I became a trend forecaster. I said, what will the implications be? And Golden Oil, $10,000 bet, I made almost $750,000. And I quit my job and I became a trend forecaster. I lost a lot of the dough. I was, you know, gambling away. But now what's going on is the same thing. All they're doing is teaching us how to hate Iran. You're seeing all the sanctions, the crap, the puke coming out of the mouth of the politicians. We're condemning Iran for attacking Israel. Hey, wait a minute. Israel could attack Iran anytime they want. They could attack a consulate that's against international law, even in a time of war. They could kill any commander. They could kill anybody they want anywhere. That's right. We're the chosen people. Oh, it says so right in the Torah, chapter 6, section 8. You're making up this crap. They're all, now they're putting sanctions on Iran. This thing is heating up. Israel is going to strike back. When they do, World War III is going to continue to escalate. If we don't have peace on earth, we are going to be annihilated in nuclear war. Oh, don't believe me? Look up the Samson option. Oh, yeah, in Israel, Samson option. If we lose, we go nuclear. And we only have about between 200 to 400 nuclear warheads. Oh, you have nuclear warheads? That's right. But Iran's not allowed to have them. We're the chosen people. This is serious.
It's deadly serious, Gerald. And sometimes I think there's only thee and me can see it. I've been following your coverage online, and I'm a big supporter of your journal. And I'm just wondering how it is that the United States, I mean, I'll come to the UK in a minute, but how did the United States walk quietly into a situation where virtually every politician is literally bought and paid for by the supporters of Israel? And I'm talking people who wouldn't be a legend in their own street. I'm talking people whose faces I've never seen, whose names I've never heard, though the congresswoman or man from this or that, and they're receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from a foreign country, which doesn't even have to register as a foreign agent, such that your country is no longer in control of its own destiny. How does Joe Biden tell Netanyahu to go and get lost when Israel gave him $11.1 million? How?
He doesn't. Again, the whole thing is bought off, and you're making it perfectly clear that nobody knows about AIPAC, foreign establishment, and they're doing anything that they want. They're buying off everybody. America, this is the country that kills people all over the world in the name of freedom and democracy. To run for office in America, you got to have a lot of money behind you. By the way, I began my career running political campaigns in Westchester County, the richest county in America. I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate, designed and instructed American politics and campaign technology, how to run campaigns. Taught it at St. John's University. What people call a government is nothing more than a crime syndicate. And I also, by the way, I watched your podcast with your show with Scott Ritter on following Iran's attack. All of the media in America and all of the little imbeciles that follow the mainstream media believe that Israel was victorious in stopping Iran when they attacked. Knowing nothing of the facts, everybody should listen to that podcast that you did with Scott Ritter and how you introduced him and who he is. And he's a friend of mine. We go out to dinner. He's talking at my peace rallies up here. I launched Occupy Peace over a decade ago. He gives the details, but here is the headlines that the people swallow. Iran has launched dozens of drones at Israel. IDF says it aims to intercept them in hours. And then they said 99% of them were destroyed. And again, have no details about the facts of this. So everybody, please watch that video. Scott Ritter makes it clear of the true danger Israel is in. And also, Mr. Galloway, you were talking about how they created, when I heard some of it, before I came on the air, about how they invented the state of Israel. This is your Trends Journal when it used to be a quarterly, 2006, Crusades 2000. Regardless of what England's reasons or intentions were, self-serving or otherwise, Crusades 2000 was set in motion by the 1917 Balfour Declaration. Oh, what's a Balfour Declaration? We don't know anything, but oh, well, a Balfour Declaration that laid the foundation for Israel, quote, His Majesty's government, oh, His Majesty's government, these murderous bastards over there where the sun never sets on the British Empire, we are slaughtering people all over the world. Oh, that's right, His Majesty's government. His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. Who the hell is he to say that they should establish a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine? Oh, the Rothschilds. Look it up. It's a fact. It goes on. And we will use our best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this objective. Totally invented. Totally invented. Have no right being there. Oh, and they just stole about another 7,000 acres of Palestinian land in the West Bank that they call settlements in violation of the Geneva Convention and Article 6, 242 of the United Nations. This is serious what's going on. This is a demonic government in
very,
charge
very, very
slaughtering
serious.
Innocent people.
Yeah, slaughtering 72% of the people who've been slaughtered were women and children. Ipso yep. facto, by definition, not Hamas. The idea that these women and children were legitimate targets would not be accepted in any other theater of conflict. It would not be nope. accepted as legitimate behavior by any other government anywhere in the world, including your government, including my government. But it is somehow acceptable for Israel to do it. And when they can no longer defend it, they simply begin not to report it. So 11 children were killed yesterday in a playground in the Benghazi refugee camp in Gaza. 11 children. Not one single British newspaper or British media outfit even reported that it happened. Talk about exceptionalism, Gerald.
Actually, at least, yep. And matter of fact, you know who did report it in the United States was the Cartoon News Network, CNN. And it said at least 13 people were killed, including several children and more than 25 injured after a strike targeted the Al-Maghazi refugee camp. And they show the graphics, the videos. And this is the nice language. You ready? Dozens of people appear to be running around in panic. They had a video screaming and trying to count and carry the dead bodies. It shows several casualties scattered on the floor, including children with blood streaming across the floor. Kids screaming, people screaming, kids dead on the ground. They were just playing football and they were martyred. This guy's, again, right in front of everybody's eyes. Like you said, could you imagine if it was the Jewish people in Gaza and the Palestinians were bombing them to death like this? Oh my God, how terrible. The hypocrisy.
Yeah, it's very difficult to remain unemotional about it. But let me try and segue before I start crying. You are a political atheist. And your attitude is, you know, a plague on both, on all of their houses. And that's no wonder when we see the character of the people that are running for office. But because you are the most perspicacious man in America, help our international audience with your reading so far on how the American presidential election is going.
It's a guessing game. We had the Trends Journal magazine. And by the way, anybody could get the Trends Journal magazine by going to trendsjournal.com and you get 10% off. Hit Moats, they'll put up the link to put on And it's lovely. Only $2.50 a week. It's nothing. And this week's is almost 200 pages, and you can listen to it. It's a magazine. You read what you want. But going back to the presidential election, we called Trump a winner in May of 2016 when we said that we were the only ones saying it. All the polls showed he would lose. Right now, it's a total guessing game. And again, I've been at this, I said, a lot of years. I used to run political campaigns toward St. John's University, on and on. One of my lines is, when all else fails, they take you to war. When you go to war, people have no, they back the president that's in power. If you need any more proof, let's go back to the dot-com bust. Again, we had forecasted in your trends journal, dot-com this, fall of 1999. We said that it was going to bust by the second quarter of 2000. It did in March. America's in a deep recession. They couldn't stand little Georgie Bush. What happens? 9/11. War on terror. We're going to get that guy Osama bin Laden, dead or alive. A little boy of nothing, with a pair of cojones smaller than a mothball, a little ignorant little jerk of a nothing, a daddy's boy. 88% of the people swallow the crap spewing out of his mouth. When all else fails, they take you to war. Nobody could predict what's going to go on with this presidential reality show. That's all it is. And also, as people are watching, again, one of my lines is GC's 3Gs, guns, gold, and a getaway plan. You better prepare for the worst. One of our top trends for 2024, it's right there for anybody to see, January 2nd, 2024, a golden year for gold. Gold prices are up now over $300 an ounce since we said that. The reason gold is going up, there are basic reasons. One, in the run-up to the presidential reality show, they're going to lower interest rates to keep the power in the United States. Miss Faccia Brutta, the ugly face, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, her former job was the head of the Federal Reserve, shows you who's running the country. She's the Treasury Secretary. They want to keep her in there. They're going to lower interest rates. The lower interest rates go, the deeper the dollar falls, and it's going to be the beginning of the death of the dollar, the higher gold prices go. Number two, oil prices, which are going to bring inflation in very heavily if and when, not if, when the Israel war and Iran war escalate. You're going to see oil prices hit around $130 a barrel. That's going to crash the global economy and the equity markets. Number three is, they're going to do everything they can to come out with a digital currency. And when they do that, gold prices are going to go up too. That's another one that's pushing them up. So you got the inflation, you got gold, and you got the war. The war is going to keep heating up, and that's going to really bring up gold prices. Gold prices, as we're speaking now, are about $2,375 an ounce. It was up as almost $3,240 an ounce today. It backed off. We can see gold hitting around $3,000 an ounce this year. This is serious. The reason, again, the other reason they're buying it, you go to China. The China economy, when they locked the place down for 3 years, it destroyed the lives and livelihoods of hundreds of millions of people. The place was overbuilt after they brought him into the World Trade Organization in 2001, Bill Clinton did, and they skyrocketed their GDP. It got overbuilt. They made a bad situation worse with 3 years of COVID lockdown. So what's going on? The real estate sector in China accounts for nearly 30% of the gross domestic product, and the real estate sector is crashing. What also is going to bring gold prices up that no one's talking about, that's one of our top trends of 2024, is banks go bust. When they lock down everything and force people to stay at home, and you're in the UK and listening to great over there, and that was a canary wharf, what do they call it, where all the HSBC one after another are leaving, The office vacancy rate in New York City is 23%. San Francisco, 30%. Portland, Oregon, 29%. On average, over 20%. Office vacancy rate, nobody there, around 50%. There's going to be huge defaults on these trillions. It's almost $2 trillion worth of commercial real estate. You're going to see massive defaults. They're not talking about this at all. That's going to crash the banking system. That's why gold prices are going to go up also. But again, when all else fails, they take you to war.
Well, I'd be rushing off to buy some gold, A, if I had the money to buy it, and B, if I thought you could take it with you. But as none of this might matter in the end, all I can say is everyone watching this should get on to the trend. They should get on. We'll put it up, Trends Journal. We'll put up the link. Everybody should get on it. It's actually the best predictor for all matters, economic and political, that I have ever seen. Gerald, many thanks for joining us and for imparting your words of wisdom. By the way, Gerald, the Scott Ritter interview that you referred to has 688,000 views on YouTube alone. That means it's got well over a million views in the last 2 days, 48 hours. That's how good it was. Gerald, thanks for everything. Let me take a quick break and then I'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Most people are in the rest of the world, of course, although if you live in the West, you very often find that very difficult to find as a fact. Most people in the West think that we are the world. They talk about the international community when they mean the US and the UK, and maybe some parts, the whiter parts of the EU, as the international community. But of course, only 13% of the people of the world live in those three areas. Very much at the center of the new world that is coming into view is Iran, where Professor Syed Mohammad Marandi is a towering academic and intellectual and commentator. And we are very lucky to have him once again back on the Mother of All Talk Shows. Professor, thank you for joining us again so soon. But you're the only show in town. Iran is now at the center of the world. David Cameron, the pig farmer from England, is there now. And he's told us that there's going to be an attack on Iran and that he is going to support it. So the scene is set, isn't it, for some very dramatic events. Please tell us.
Well, the Israeli regime has threatened to attack Iran, and if they don't, it will be a humiliation in itself. But I think of all these different regimes, the United States so far has been more smart in the sense that they have said that they're opposed to another strike. And the reason is that they know that the balance of power, it lies in Iran's favor. After the Iranian strike, the Western media has been saying what a great victory this was for the Israelis. But it was a catastrophic defeat. And it goes back to your introduction, where you were saying, before I spoke, where you were saying that some people in the West think that this is the world. It isn't. When the Israeli regime struck the Iranian embassy and murdered Iranians and local employees, the world was outraged. The international community was outraged. The Americans and the British and the French governments, they went to the UN Security Council and prevented a condemnation. They supported the bombing of the embassy, which is a major violation of international law, and it shows that these countries have no respect for the laws and norms that they are always at least in theory, advocating. But the rest of the world stood with Iran. And that gave Iran the opportunity to punish the Israeli regime. What did Iran do? They sent, after 10 days of playing mind games with the Israelis, they announced that they're going to attack. They sent a couple of hundred drones, very old drones with no new technology. And the Israeli regime fell into the trap. And so did the Americans. They fired all their high-tech missiles and used all their high-tech equipment, giving Iran a huge amount of intelligence. They spent a huge amount of money. Just the Israelis alone, $1.35 billion, according to their estimates. The Americans spent a lot of money too. And the Iranians spent maybe a couple of million dollars on these old drones, which were decoys. And then Iran sent some old missiles, and the same thing happened. And then the Iranians, alongside the old missiles, fired a handful of missiles that were more modern, not the most modern. And they went right through the defense system and hit the two bases, the air base in the south and the intelligence gathering base on the Golan Heights. And they showed the Israelis that they can't stop them, even though these two bases are probably the most well-protected bases in the world through the air defense system there. So the Iranians gained information. It was a major success. It was very inexpensive, very costly for the Americans and the Israelis, especially now that there's a shortage of these missiles because they're being used in Ukraine as well. And the Iranians also show the Israelis that we can hit wherever we want. Now, these Western governments and the Western mainstream media can claim it was a fantastic victory for Israel, which is fine. They can believe their own propaganda. But the problem is that if they believe their propaganda, then their calculations will be wrong. And then if tomorrow the Israeli regime strikes Iran, the Iranians will strike back in a way in which they will all be stunned, because it won't be a couple of hundred old drones and a few old missiles. It will be thousands of very modern missiles and drones that will rain in onto the heads of the Israeli armed forces, and they won't be given a warning. They won't be given heads up like they did last time. So it's up to the regime. The Israeli regime, does it want to get badly battered and believe its own propaganda and be severely punished? Or is it going to back down and move on?
Well, judging by Cameron's visit today, they're not going to back down or move on. And therefore, we must assume, unless Netanyahu is overthrown in the interim, which is, of course, a possibility, leading to at least a hiatus in which new calibrations are made, we're into a terrible, terrible situation, which could escalate because, as I was saying earlier in my monologue, Iran has the support of China and Russia. Israel has the support of the United Kingdom, sometimes France, and a reluctant Joe Biden, who must be cursing his luck that this is all happening when he is so befuddled. Other people are having to take the decisions for him. It is therefore justifiable to say that we could be on the verge of a world conflagration. Might we not?
It's possible. It's possible. If the Israeli regime strikes Iran, Iran will strike back much harder. Much harder. And that could lead to a situation where the Americans are pushed to intervene. If the Americans strike Iran, then imagine what the Iranian response will be. First of all, we have large numbers of underground bases for drones and missiles. And Iran is a very high-tech country when it comes to these military capabilities. The West themselves grudgingly acknowledge it when they claim that Iran is helping the Russians. So Iran has all these underground bases across the country with hundreds of thousands of drones and missiles. So if the Americans strike Iran, what happens? Their bases will be overrun in Iraq. The Iraqi resistance will not tolerate them. They'll be gone. And perhaps the embassy will be gone. And they will be expelled from Syria because their illegal occupation in Syria depends on Iraq. And then their bases in the Persian Gulf region will be destroyed. And these are just a couple of minutes away for Iranian missiles. And then those countries that host those bases, they will be seen as partners in crime. They will pay the price, and their oil and gas installations will be destroyed. So oil and gas in Central Asia from the Caucasus and especially the Persian Gulf, they will be off the market. And that will create a global economic catastrophe, I think, far worse than 1929. So there is a possibility that we will go there. Personally, I think that there are enough sane people in the United States, pretty evil, but sane people in the United States political establishment that recognize the danger. But who knows? So we'll see if the Israeli regime from the very beginning, this is what we were all saying. This is what you were saying. This is what I also believe, that this genocidal war, if the Americans don't pull the or yank on the leash of their mad dogs in Tel Aviv, it's going to escalate because the Israeli regime has lost in Gaza. It's lost alongside the war in Lebanon. They're humiliated. They've across the world, they're now despised because of the genocide. So they either have to give up and be humiliated, or they have to expand the war to find a route to victory or to escape defeat. But it's only going to make things worse and more dangerous.
That was such a perfect answer. I'm almost tempted to close the interview now because that answer could scarcely be better. But let me ask you, if you like, a tangential question. And you're not a government representative, you're not a diplomat, so we can talk as if nobody else was present. It must have been a bitter pill to swallow that an Arab government, we've long ago given up hope of most of these Arab governments of doing anything for the Palestinians. But last weekend we saw something quite novel. We had an Arab government, which, by the way, has millions of Palestinians within its population, actually go to war for Israel, to use their military capabilities to blunt the Iranian retaliation to Israel's crime in Damascus. That must be quite a difficult thing for you to accept in Iran.
A couple of things. One is that just two, 3 weeks ago, or a bit more, before they struck the Iranian embassy, the Israelis struck an Iranian-affiliated base in near Aleppo in order to help the ISIS and al-Qaeda terrorists in Aleppo, those that are being supported by NATO and their affiliates. And they flew over the Jordanian territory to al-Tanaf near the Iraqi border and then flew into Syria. So they went around Syrian air defenses. And so the Jordanians allowed them to fly all the way to Iraq and then enter Syria. And then they fired their missiles at those bases and returned. By the way, the Iranians have said the equation has changed, and they, from now on, any Iranian targets anywhere, if they're attacked, citizens or assets, the Iranians will retaliate from Iran. So that is an important change, and that's going to narrow down the scope of the Israeli military's ability to function in Syria. But in any case, the Jordanians allowed them to go through their territory to bomb Syria and to help these extremist groups. But when the Iranians fired the drones, as you rightly point out, the Jordanians helped the Americans and the Israelis down them. However, and I don't have information on this, this is speculation, 100%. I have a feeling that the Iranians intentionally sent these old drones, these cheap, dirt cheap drones over Jordan so that the Jordanian regime would expose itself and carry out these acts that they did, because that is ultimately going to make it more despised, and it puts more pressure on the regime in future when it comes to Israel and Palestine. This is just speculation. I really have no information, but I think that the Iranians did this on purpose because ultimately these drones were not going to hit any targets. These were, as I said, drones that were cheap. They were meant to force the Israelis and the Americans to spend to use all their missiles, very expensive missiles, and for Iran to figure out what sort of defense capabilities they have. So they were for intelligence gathering, and the Americans and the Israelis fell into the trap. But I'm guessing that the Iranians did this so that the Jordanian regime would be put under pressure, and that would give people on the ground more incentive to put pressure on the regime with regards to what's going on in Palestine.
Now, finally, Professor, of course, the West has spent a lot of money, a lot of time fomenting opposition inside Iran and encamping some elements of opposition outside of Iran. I'm thinking of the MK terrorist outfit. I think the last time I saw they were in Albania. The puppet crown prince, so-called, the son of Pahlavi, the deposed Shah of Iran. These monarchists exist. The MK terrorists exist. A pink ramp exists. A feminist ramp exists. They have many arrows in their bag. What's the public view in Iran about the situation? Are they steady as they face this potential escalation in events? What's the parliament saying? Are there any dissenters in the government? It would be interesting for our audience to know.
You know, George, Iranians have always traditionally supported the Palestinians, but there's always been a minority in Iran that was more, let's say, liberal and pro-Western, and their views differed, always. And there's always been a debate about how much Iran should support the Palestinians and how, you know, weapons, how much should we spend on their defenses and so on. Some believe we should do more, some less. Most, I think, believe that what we're doing now is about right, which is basically what led to the resistance being able to hold Gaza for 6-7 months, and the Lebanese Hezbollah the same. Of course, their heroics alongside those infrastructure, the infrastructure that was created. But after October the 7th and after the genocide, just like the rest of the world, just like in where you are, the mood has changed. So those who supported Palestine, they continue to support Palestine. They are, they've always been the majority. But that minority that thought we should cut a deal with the Israelis and support a two-state solution and all that, their numbers have diminished. I have a couple of people who are actually pretty close to me, and we would have discussions about Israel, and they would have differing views than me. My view has always been that it's illegitimate, and that apartheid must be altogether, the regime must be dismantled, and that Jews, Christians, and Muslims should live together as equals in the land. Those people who thought differently, they're changing. They're shifting because they're seeing the genocide. So the Israeli regime, I personally believe that the greatest defeat was not actually on the battlefield. They were defeated in Gaza. They were defeated against Lebanon. They were defeated in the exchange so far with Iran. They've been defeated by Ansarullah, or the Yemeni armed forces. But the greatest defeat is due to the genocide that they're carrying out. They've destroyed themselves across the world. And of course, Western regimes are sacrificing themselves and their credibility and their image for the Israelis too. But I think that Iran, alongside the rest of the world in Iran, the position is hardening. And this is only going to make things worse for the Israelis. And the Iranians overwhelmingly, from what I've seen, and it's anecdotal, overwhelmingly supported the Iranian strike.
Very interesting. Professor, as always, Syed Mohammad Marandi, thank you for your wisdom and your time. And stay safe. Has Israel lost the war? Answer, yes or no. 35,682 people have voted. Not bad for a Wednesday night.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Let's go to Hassan in London on the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan. Hassan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Good to speak to you. So I believe in sort of democratic participation and rewarding and punishing parties and politicians for how they've behaved. And Sadiq Khan, I think, has been very weak on Gaza. He has not spoken in favor of sanctions. He hasn't spoken out in favor of ending arms sales or against the genocide. So I don't want to vote for him or for Labour. But I wanted your advice in terms of who should we vote for, because everybody gets three votes, and I want to use them to reward people that have been true to Palestine and other leftist issues.
It's a very good question, and moreover, I'm not able tonight to give you an answer to it. If this election in London had come 1 year from now, we would have had a candidate and a full slate of London Assembly candidates, but we don't. We don't have the resources, didn't have the resources to fight our by-election in Rochdale, then the local elections, including the mayoral election in London. And of course, because I was elected in Rochdale, my candidacy in London necessarily fell, and we were not able, and I'm sorry about that, to give our supporters in London a proper opportunity to vote for our political approach. We don't have a line on who to vote for. Indeed, I don't even know who is standing. But I give you this assurance, Hassan. I will return to this issue on Sunday with recommendations as to what people who support me in London should do. I'm grateful to you. The legend, that is Norma, is on the line from Bristol. Go ahead, Norma.
Hello, George. Very good program. Now, Gerard Celente, he spoke about the fall of the Shah of Persia. And like your MPs, do you think you could, the ones who didn't know a lot of the history, I would like if you could explain a bit more to us about the history, because I don't know some of the stuff about Iran, and I know the Shah of Persia was very popular in this country at one time. So I wondered if you could explain in a quick one, because we haven't got much time, what's a little bit of the back history.
I will do, and I'm grateful to you for the opportunity to do so. But we only have 3 minutes, so I'll be as quick as I can. Britain was the colonial power occupying Persia. We had a puppet Shah who allowed us to do so, but the growing popular groundswell in Iran over the issue of foreign occupation, and in particular foreign ownership of Iran's then only economic asset, which was the vast ocean of oil underneath its soil. Then they didn't know about the gas, but the oil was so plentiful that it should have made the lives of everyone in Iran very comfortable indeed. But of course, it didn't, because it was owned by the British. The British occupation allowed what became BP to loot the Iranian natural resource, which God had given them. And this generated, of course, a great deal of nationalist feeling, but also in the spirit of the times, 1950s we're talking about, when the Soviet Union existed, when the Soviet Union was just up the road, across the border, the influence of the very powerful Iranian Communist Party at the time, the Two-Day Party, and the popularity of the Democratic Socialist Forces led by Dr. Mossadegh. Eventually, they forced the abdication of the Shah, drove him out of the country. That's the first Shah, the father of Pahlavi that you know well. They forced him out, and they forced free elections to be held, and Mossadegh won them and became the only democratically elected leader that Iran has ever had. Imagine. And his first act was to nationalize the British-owned oil holdings, because that's what the Iranian people had voted for. And as soon as he nationalized the oil, the petrol, from what became BP, or what was actually by then BP, which was then a British nationalized company, I think it was Churchill in 1919 that nationalized BP. So we had the British state-owned Iran's petrol, oil. Mossadegh began the process of nationalizing it to use the revenues for the benefit of the people of Iran. And the British and the Americans decided to overthrow him. And none of this is speculation or leftist propaganda. The people involved are still alive. One of them is in the House of Lords at the end of the corridor here. Believe it or not, she's still alive and in this parliament building. The MI6 and the CIA organized the violent overthrow of the democratic government in Iran and reversed the nationalization of Iran's oil and reinstated the Shah, though this time the son of the Shah that had been overthrown. How's that for interference? How's that for electoral interference by a foreign power or powers in the domestic affairs of the people of Iran? And that situation persisted until the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The oil was looted. Of course, a part of it was given to the comprador, collaborating class with the empire. The Shah got a bit. His ruling comprador circle got a bit. But the multinational corporations got the rest. And that existed under the dark shadow of the utter, total dictatorship of the Shah of Persia, whose intelligence service, the SAVAK, was the most brutal torturers in the entire area. And there was a lot of competition for that accolade. The SAVAK and the Iranian armed forces kept the Shah in power, kept the multinational corporations' money rolling, kept the Iranian people in servitude and in poverty, and denied them their basic political, civil, and religious rights. And all the while, the gathering storm that became the Iranian people's retribution, their revenge on the West for what they had done to their country. was the Islamic Revolution, which triumphed in 1979. And since then, Iran, I'm not a supporter, by the way, of the political system in Iran. Someone like me wouldn't last all that long in politics in Iran. But I've got to tell you that Iran and Cuba are the only two surviving countries that since 1979 until now have been unrelenting, unremitting opponents of imperialism and all of its works. For now 45 years, the Iranian Revolution has remained true, at least in foreign policy, to the anti-imperialist camp. No other country other than Cuba can say that. Just think about that. No wonder they hate it. It's been marvelous for me. I really enjoyed the show. I hope you did too. 40,000 people voted in the poll, and overwhelmingly, you believe that Israel has lost the war. The last war, yeah. The war this weekend, let's wait and see. Join me on Sunday for the Mother of All Talk Shows.